Blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Painted white daisies appear on a bright blue background. Titles appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Doris Day as Kate McKay. David Niven as Larry McKay. A YouTube production. A thick cartoon book appears over the titles. In multicolored letters, it reads, "Please don't eat the daisies." This film is described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Jessica Schroeder. Read by J.T. Turner. More titles. Co-starring Janice Page as Deborah Vaughn, Spring Byington as Mrs. Robinson, Richard Hayden as Alfred North. As more titles appear, small clusters of painted daisies fade from the background. With Patsy Kelly, Jack Weston, John Harding, Margaret Lindsay, Carmen Phillips, and Mary Patton. Screenplay by Isabel Lenart, based on the book by Jean Kerr. Produced by Joe Pasternak. Music score by David Rose. Copyright 1960, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. The last daisy disappears, leaving only the background of blue. Directed by Charles Walters. The blue background fades to a hazy sky. Our view pans down to a city street lined with towering stone and brick buildings. A street sign reads, "New York City, no parking." An elderly gentleman walks past the sign on a bustling sidewalk. He greets a woman carrying groceries. A paper bag filled with water falls onto his head. On a windowsill above, a toddler boy looks down through iron bars. An older boy with red hair crouches behind him.
Attaboy, Adam. Bullseye.
I got enough for a couple more.
Well, hurry up. We gotta go scrap.
Gabriel, a blonde boy, uses an enema bag to fill a paper sack for George, the redhead. A fourth dark-haired boy, David, plays checkers with a huge shaggy terrier.
Awful quiet out there.
What's going on?
Their blonde mother, wearing a black slip, peeks into the room.
Oh, what are you doing with it this time? Now empty that thing and please put it... Adam?
The toddler
Adam?
Holds another paper bag out
Come
the window.
On, sweetheart. It's a no-no. Adam?
She reaches through the bars, coaxing the bag from Adam's outstretched hand.
I give it to Mommy. Adam, don't drop it.
He drops it. She pulls Adam away from the window.
That does it. George, Gabriel, no television for you two tonight.
What do we do? You never said anything about paper bags out the window. You're just a cherry picks of marbles.
Anyway, we didn't drop them. It was Adam.
I suppose it was Adam's idea. Yes, I know, sweetheart. It wasn't your fault.
She sets him in a large wooden cage and padlocks the door.
Well, gee, if they murdered somebody, it'd be the guy that shot off the gun and go to jail. Not the one that got the idea. So Adam's the one that shouldn't get to watch television. I mean, if you want to be fair.
Well, I don't want to be fair. Now, what do you think about that?
So nobody gets to watch television, including the attorney for the defense.
She storms into her bedroom and starts to dress. The boys trail after her.
Oh, just once in my life I'd like to get dressed without an audience.
Boy, if we made a mess like this in our room, she'd sure carry on.
Yeah. Listen, when I make a mess, I clean it up. When you make a mess, I clean it up, too. Goodbye, gentlemen.
The boys stay. They watch her put on mascara.
What do you do that for?
My eyelashes longer.
What do you want them to look longer for?
Everybody wants it.
Oh, fellas, now you know I have to meet David. Put that down. Now, I'm very late. Now, will you please have a heart?
A woman enters, tugging a black coat over her matronly frame.
McKay.
Yes?
Maybe I ought to feed the kids before I go, seeing it's a new babysitter.
Let her have the pleasure. You better go, Maggie. It's after six. After six. Oh, for heaven's sake.
George, this is my last warning. You eat tomatoes in bed once more, and you scrape the seeds off the sheet.
Oh, Maggie, you always say that.
I know.
Bye. I'll get it. Hello? Oh, hi, Mother. Mother, I can't talk. I'm dressing to meet Larry. What? Mother,
Mother, why did you promise? Now, you know Larry only gets two tickets for openings. Mother, critics don't ask producers for favors. What if producers ask for favors back?
The boys fidget.
Well, Mother, I'm sorry. You'll have to be mad.
Ow!
I'm so, for heaven's sake, I'm sorry.
Ow! I had it!
The brown-haired David answers.
Hello?
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's for you.
Who is it?
How should I know?
Oh, hello? Oh, Alfred North, boy producer. It's your godfather, Dopey. How are you, godfather? Full of opening night jitters?
Not a jitter to my name.
Backstage at a theater.
I've never been this happy and relaxed about a show. It's Larry I'm worried about. Well, Kate, his first signed review as a major critic's awfully important. Everybody will be looking for it. But don't make him nervous about it. Just let him come to the theater, enjoy himself, and write what he feels. Oh, and tell him from me that I'm feeling pretty sentimental about my opening night being his opening night, too.
He made a fine, slobbery speech on the very same theme this morning. He said, stop it! Oh, not you, Alfred. George!
What?
Not you, Alfred.
Kate, dear, this is a very old vaudeville bit. What's the matter with you?
I have four kids, and they're all in this room. That's what's the matter with me. Out! Darling, I've got to go. Of course we'll be at the party. I've lost 5 pounds and bought a new dress for it. All right, darling. I'll be praying when the curtain rises. Bye-bye.
In her bedroom.
Now, stop it. Now, I'm in it now. Go on in there and play. Go play with Hobo.
He's asleep. That's all he does. He can sleep.
Well, he's a dog. What do you want from him? Blank verse?
She struggles into a black dress.
What about Adam? Why don't you go in and talk to Adam for a change?
What about Coca-Cola?
Kate grunts with effort as all three boys stare up at her.
Maybe you should have lost 10 pounds.
She glares at David and yanks the slinky gown over her hips with both hands. The boys exchange dubious glances. Kate slides the spaghetti straps over her shoulders, then motions to David.
Help me, huh? Help me, David. Zip it up now. Oh!
Sorry.
Oh, you just took a pound of dear old mother. Now keep going, huh? No matter how much I holler.
A white fabric flower the size of her son's head puffs out from the dress's bosom.
Okay. Thank you. Here, how do I look, fellas?
Like you're gonna bust.
Flatter. Get it for me, will you? It's the new baby's name. And be nice. Don't scare her.
Hi.
A man holding a manuscript.
Does Lawrence McKay live here?
Yeah, but he's not in. Want to talk to my mother? That's his wife.
Yeah, if she isn't busy.
She's not busy, just getting dressed, that's all. Come on in.
David leads him into the living room. Gabriel and George approach, and the man stares guardedly at the three boys. He notices Adam leaning on the bars of his wooden cage.
What's the matter with him?
Nothing.
Well, what's he all locked in for?
So he won't get out.
Keep you all in cages when you were little?
No, just him.
Kate walks in.
Mrs. Greenfield? No, you're not Mrs. Greenfield.
I'm Joe Positano. You're Mrs. McKay? There's a little old lady who runs a pet shop off East 62nd Street. She's your mother.
Yes, yes, I know.
She says I should see your husband. You see, I only drive
Mr.
a hack
Positano,
to make the money.
Why does my mother want you to see my husband?
I wrote this play. Wait till I tell you the idea. It'll knock you right on your
would
backside.
You excuse me? I'm in an awful hurry.
It's a musical.
Kate bustles around him.
Based on the first two books of the Old Testament. You know the Bible. How's that for universal appeal?
Staggering.
Ain't it? All right, so now I got it. I want an opinion. A little advice, maybe, on how to approve it.
Mr. McKay is not a playwright.
Who needs a playwright? I'm a playwright. All I need's a fella who's going to tell me what's wrong, if anything. A critic.
My husband is a very new critic.
Well, he was a professor at drama at Columbia, wasn't he? Okay, who knows more than a professor? Besides, I read a lot of his articles and reviews of those off-Broadway plays he wrote. Pips, all of them. And on top of that, the man's a square. When he reviews a play, he just doesn't make a bunch of wisecracks like the rest of those bums. He takes it serious.
She smiles, adjusting a long white glove.
It's true, isn't it?
Joe steps closer.
What do you say? Do I get to see him?
Why don't you drop by Sunday morning?
Joe pumps her hand enthusiastically.
You got yourself a deal. So long, fellas.
Bye.
Don't tell the idea of it, huh? Let it come as a surprise.
A woman stands in the hall.
I'm
Lady, you scared the daylights out of me.
Oh, come in.
Brooklyn. It is Mrs. Greenfield, isn't it?
Yes, indeedy.
I got my cab if you're going any place but Brooklyn.
Oh, how about 8th Street? My husband's lecturing at the new drama workshop.
I won't even start my meter till you get down. That's the kind of sport I am.
Deal. Mrs. Greenfield, you may think I'm a beast, but I really have to go right now. Do you think you can manage?
Why, certainly, dear. I can tell just by looking at your boys. They'll be perfect gentlemen.
She smiles at them. They scowl back.
Into the bedroom, perfect gentlemen. I want a few words with you. This one's all right. Just keep an eye on him when you let him out.
She pats Adam's cage and leaves the room. Cautiously, the sitter approaches the padlocked playpen and stares at the toddler inside.
I beg your pardon?
I saw the way you looked at her, so don't try to kid me. Now listen, fellas, be my good and true friends. Don't make a fuss about supper or your baths or going to bed, okay?
Okay. Okay.
And please, don't throw anything out of the windows or down the john.
Well, what if I feel spit upping?
What, are you expecting to?
No, but if I do, I'm not supposed to throw anything
down
the john.
Oh, come on. Now listen, David, listen to me. Before you do anything, think about what I would say, okay?
Gee, Ma, you act as if we were monsters or something.
Well, you are. You're just lucky that I happen to be peculiar and love monsters. Now, give me a kiss.
The boys duck.
I'm just a kissless mother. That's all I am. Miss Greenfield, the number's where I can be reached around the desk. The boys' supper is in the refrigerator. I think that's everything. I hope.
Miss McKay, do you mind my asking, what's the problem with the little boy?
Adam?
When I saw the barred windows and the locked pen, my heart bled for you. Is he backward?
Backward? Mrs. Greenfield, when you were 18 months old, could you pick a lock? Any lock?
Well, certainly not.
Well, Adam can.
She blows him a kiss.
Good night.
Mrs. Greenfield stares after Kate, then turns to see the three older boys watching her. She takes a step back. Now, in a classroom.
There are many theories about the drama, that it should educate people or inspire them, that it should reflect life or change it. Now, I believe it can do any of these, provided it also entertains.
Kate slips in, carrying a tuxedo and dress shoes.
From Greek drama to the circus is to entertain.
Bravo. I'm sure we are all very grateful to Professor McKay, or shall I say ex-Professor McKay, since as of today, he begins a new career as one of the 7 major drama critics of the New York Press.
Congratulations. A question, Mr. McKay. The major drama critics have a great influence on our theater and great power. Now, you yourself as a part-time reviewer have been a constructive and fair man. Do you think you can stay fair now that you're one of the Holy 7?
Well, to me, my job merely means that I should be able to spend much more time doing the one thing in the world I love most, which is going to the theater.
But you won't be just any loving theatergoer. You'll be one of the 7 men who can close any show in this town. And I can guarantee you that as soon as you...
Just a minute.
You guys go to a play hoping it's lousy. It isn't what happens on stage that matters. It's how clever you can be about trying to destroy it.
Well, I assure you that every night, every opening night, when the curtain goes up, I shall hope to see something great. But I should be paid by my newspaper to give my opinion. So what else can I do except give it honestly?
That's what you say now.
In 2 weeks,
you
just walk the others.
More than anybody else's.
Who are you to
Later, the mustached Larry McKay rides in Joe's taxi with Kate.
Oh,
they're young, and it's difficult for them getting started off in the theater. Still, they do seem to have a certain hostility to critics.
I noticed. Happy about tonight?
Mm-hmm. All lit up inside, you know. Something about getting to the top of your field, even if it's only the bottom of the top. And the fact that I'm starting with Alfred's show, very, very gratifying.
You're pretty gratifying in that getup.
He wears the tuxedo.
Think so?
Very handsome. Very distinguished.
Thank you. I may be starting a new legend tonight. Mr. McKay has never seen it an opening night without 2 suits of clothes.
I'll drop the stuff off at your apartment.
Oh, Joe, you're an angel.
Larry mouths. Who's that?
Darling, this is Joe Positano. He's a friend of mine.
Joe turns.
Hi, Mr. McKay. Look out!
Dear.
Oh, boy. Sure got off to a flying start with him.
I have a feeling there's something about you two that I should know.
Well, actually, Joe's a friend of Mother's.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not the point. Well,
Well, he's written a play and he wants you to read it. There, now you know.
Larry whispers to Kate and she nudges him. He stares at his lap.
Oh, look how he looks. Wounded like a salmon caught on a hook. What are you getting yourself in an uproar for? Look, there'll come a night when you can't sleep. You look around for something to read. So instead of the Saturday Review, you read my play. What's so terrible?
Okay, Joe, you got a deal. To the theater.
Right.
Now, an electric billboard reads, Alfred North presents Deborah Vaughn in Mademoiselle Fantin. Red neon lights form the outline of a woman shaking her bare bottom. Later, in a newspaper office.
What made me think Alfred could do a musical? What made Alfred think he could do a musical? He knows nothing about music.
His analyst said it would bring gaiety into
his life. His analyst ought to see an analyst.
Honey, Alfred didn't make the show terrible on purpose.
It just seems that way when you look at it. Yes? All right, I won't be long. That's the composing room. They're waiting. Honey, look, Alfred is our best friend. Maybe I should just hold on to that and give the show a rave. No, I can't do that. I can't start off as the drama critic for this newspaper by writing a dishonest review. Alfred wouldn't want that. Would he?
She shakes her head.
The first day I got the job, he said, Larry, all I'll ever ask of you is the truth, remember? He said he just finished his fourth martini.
Later, in an Italian restaurant.
I'm being ridiculous because Alfred's a real pro. He'll take this in his stride.
Oh, darling, of course he will. Besides, you didn't say a mean word about anybody. It was the kindest way anyone ever didn't like a show. Come on. Let's drink our wine and forget it.
Larry takes a small sip of his Chianti and sets it down, his eyes fixed morosely on the table. Kate extends her hand.
What you want?
Just a hand.
Oh. Pete?
A gray-haired waiter.
Yes, Mr. McKay? Oh, finish already.
Keep the wine coming. We've had a darling day.
It's too bad. Excuse me?
Pete clears their table. Kate smiles as she notices a young couple kissing in a booth nearby.
Honey, look. Aren't they cute?
Hmm.
How much there is to say in the beginning, huh?
Not the first couple of times I took you out. Yes, Mr. McKay. No, Mr. McKay.
Well, I couldn't get over your being a professor, dear. Remember how shocked I was the first time you made a pass at me? Of course, secretly, I was dying for you to make it. But even so, it just didn't seem dignified for a professor.
Well, at least it started you talking.
Oh, that was big talk. Life, death. Who had the happiest childhood?
Are you for or against modern art, psychoanalysis, large families?
Against.
By the way, how are the kids?
Impossible.
That's good.
She smiles at him and reaches for her wine glass.
Kate.
Yes, darling?
There's one more thing I want to tell you about Alfred.
Oh, you are such a mood killer.
Larry sighs. Kate glances toward the young couple.
Que sera, sera, whatever. The future's not ours to see. Que sera,
Larry meets sera, her gaze and grins.
What will be?
Let's go home.
Sera. Later, the McKays enter the lobby of their apartment building. Kate presses the elevator's call button, then smiles dreamily at Larry. The elevator door slides open, revealing their pajama-clad boys inside with Hobo, the dog. The boys gape at their parents as the door slides quickly shut. Kate and Larry exchange an astonished glance. Morning in the children's room. Kate crawls out of a bottom bunk bed through a small barred door. Little Adam stirs drowsily in the cage bed as Kate locks the door behind her. In the kitchen, Larry stands at the sink preparing coffee.
Oh, I'm not complaining. I just wish you'd fall asleep in my bed sometime.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. They wake each other up. That's the trouble.
Once the boys have their own rooms, things are going to be... Larry, today's the day.
What day?
The real estate lady's coming by to pick us up. Now, don't forget, we're looking at houses.
Oh, that's great. In the country, did you tell her?
Hmm?
Not the sheep country, the plain country, huh?
Tell her everything. But the boys' rooms have to be in another county. It has to be a little terrace so that we can have breakfast alone.
Hey, it's a fair chance we can do that right now.
Just the two of us.
They hug.
I can't remember what it's like.
Hobo stands in the doorway.
Uh-oh.
No, don't you suppose you could wait just once?
Do you think it's a chance worth taking?
I'll get dressed. Maybe the boys will sleep a while longer. Who knows?
Who knows? I know.
Larry leaves with Hobo. Later, he carries the shaggy-haired dog out of the elevator. Hobo clings to him, wrapping his legs around Larry's shoulders and waist. In the kitchen, Kate serves the boys oatmeal.
Come on, put the dish down now.
George has a bowl balanced on his head. Larry enters.
Morning, Dad.
Morning, Dad.
Morning, gentlemen.
Where's
the paper?
Get on the table.
It's oatmeal again, Dad. Can't you talk to her about it? Do you know what the moron said to his wife?
We'll discuss the oatmeal at a later date. Certainly I know what the moron said to his wife. He said, let's have breakfast alone.
Just a silly whim. What would we talk about?
Give me the cream.
Please.
Larry opens a bread box.
We can talk about Hobo. If he doesn't find some way of walking in and out of elevators on his own 4 feet, he'll have to go on a diet.
Drink your milk.
Kate, speaking of diets, could we please have some real bread just once instead of this no-calorie,
Darling,
no taste?
The stores are open to one and all. If you want to go out and buy it.
Ooh.
I'm sorry. David, see who it is, dear.
The brunette hurries out of the kitchen.
George, stop kicking the table with your foot.
I'm not kicking, I'm tapping.
Well, then stop tapping the table with your foot. Come on, Angel.
It isn't his foot, it's a fork. Just one of the kitchen forks, not a good
one.
Well,
will you stop doing anything?
You want us to stop eating?
Oh, for heaven's sake, now pick
Come
up...
Here.
Oh.
Alfred walks in with a newspaper.
Come sit near me. Hi, Uncle Alfred.
Hi, Uncle Alfred.
Want some oatmeal? It's good for you.
Morning, George. Gabriel. Adam. Kate.
He eyes Larry.
Morning, friend.
You're just in time for a cup of coffee.
I'm glad you came over, Alfred.
Oh, that's a funny line.
I was going to call you up, only I wanted to make sure you were up.
Do you imagine I slept after this betrayal?
Won't you please have a cup of coffee?
Kate, if there's some coffee that must be drunk, for heaven's sake, drink it.
Alfred, you must realize I would have given my soul to have liked your play. I had to be honest, didn't I?
In print, no. Not if 20 years' friendship meant anything to you.
I'll be glad to discuss it with you after you... Calm down.
All right. Seems fair.
Alfred pulls a chair up to the kitchen table and sits facing Larry. He takes a deep breath, then turns to little Adam.
Coca-Cola?
Alfred smiles widely at the other children. He glances at Larry and heaves a deep breath.
Am I calm enough now?
Alfred... Before we say anything else, I swear to you, I sweated blood over that review. And your friendship means a great deal to me.
Kid, if this was written by a friend, I don't need any enemies.
Alfred reads.
Whatever the theatrical season brings, this offering must be considered its greatest disappointment. That's friendly.
Oh, read the rest of it. Because it comes from Alfred North, whose magnificent record includes, and then I go on to list all your past glories.
By way of showing how low I've fallen.
Well, of course, you're going to misinterpret every word I wrote.
You mean there's more than one way to interpret this? Miss Deborah Vaughan, the star of this piece, is no actress. It seems unnecessarily cruel to say anything more. Charming.
If she'd been charming, I'd have said so.
Mom, what are they so mad about?
They're not mad, dear. They're having a difference of opinion.
That's right, David. One of us thinks the other of us is a louse.
Alfred, I think you better go.
I'll go when I'm good and ready. I've every right to be here, haven't I, Kate? I'm the godfather of these kiddies. Their guardian, if anything happens to their dear old dad. And that's not so far-fetched, dear old dad. You're living pretty dangerously these days.
I don't have to sit here and listen to this.
He leaves as Maggie enters.
Kate, will you listen to me objectively?
Mrs. McKay, you want me to take the kids to the park and out of the way?
Kate nods.
Now, look, Kate, I am not being unreasonable. I hate Larry.
Salad
at a restaurant.
Rye toast without butter and black coffee.
It's crazy, isn't it? When you consider what a nice shape Mrs. McKay got.
Hey, let's double-cross her. Give her eggs Benedict, hash brown potatoes, and cheesecake.
She'll kill you.
Not till after she's eaten.
The waiter leaves. Larry lifts a martini glass, then freezes. He sees a young woman wearing a mink stole and a stylish cloche hat talking to the maitre d'. She meets Larry's gaze and saunters over to his table. He stands.
You're Lawrence McKay?
Yes.
I'm Deborah Vaughn.
Yes, I know.
Oh, good. In that case, I'm sure you'll understand.
She slaps him. Deborah walks to a photographer.
Get it?
Could I have one more just to be safe?
Bet your sweet life.
She turns back to Larry, who stands once more in greeting. A camera flashes. Deborah slinks out of the restaurant with her photographer, past Kate, who hurries to Larry's table.
Larry, sit down.
He sits down gingerly, a stricken look on his face.
We're not going to run and hide.
Kate glances furtively around the dining room.
You stop looking so guilty?
I feel guilty. Well, that poor girl, she never would have done that if she hadn't been terribly upset by my review.
Oh, now, wait a minute. One slap? All right, she's upset. But two slaps? Because that photographer she brought didn't get the first one.
Larry's eyes widen.
How do you like that?
I don't. Next question?
She pulls off a white glove as the waiter sets a plate in front of her. With a knife and fork, Kate attacks her breakfast. Larry stares at his meal pensively.
Still burning?
I find I don't like having my face slapped. I don't think I'm going to like seeing pictures of it spread all over the newspapers.
Kate sighs, chewing.
Honey, us broads own the world. You can't hit back at her without being a cad.
I'm worse than that already. I'm a first-string critic, a sitting duck. The man you love to hate.
Kate salts her eggs.
If it's love you're looking for, I think you're in the wrong racket.
Oh, I'll settle for honest hate if that's what the job brings, but a slap in the face for publicity is not honest hate. That's something you do to some poor schnook who won't hit back. Well, I might as well serve notice right at the start. Hit me at your own risk. If they're going to treat me like Jack the Ripper, I'm not going to respond like John the Gent. May I?
He takes a red and white menu.
Miss Vaughn may have the last slap, but I'm going to have the last laugh.
He writes in the menu. Mouth full, Kate looks at her plate.
Eggs Benedict.
She glares. Now, a maid answers the door of a swank pink apartment.
Good morning, Alice. Good morning.
Alfred enters, a newspaper under one arm. He walks through a bedroom.
Are you decent?
Come on in.
Alfred opens the door to a large furnished bathroom. Inside, Deborah Vaughn lounges in a bubble bath.
Congratulations. Yesterday was a slack day. Nobody started a war or assassinated anybody. There was nothing to put on the front page. Nothing but you.
A huge photo of Larry getting slapped.
Well, sing a hallelujah like the song says. Ooh, read me the words, Alfred.
She swims over to him through the bubbles.
With expression, please.
Well, there's a description of the battle itself. Mm-hmm. Biographies of the two contenders. Yours mentioning that you're 29.
I have been.
Then there's a column headed He Who Got Slapped, signed Lawrence McKay.
An apology.
Alfred reads.
I am a mild man. Oh. I have been known to step aside to give a caterpillar right of way. I abhor physical violence, especially when it is directed at me. So, when Miss Deborah Vaughn slapped my face at Sardis yesterday, I abhorred it plenty. What unmentionable thing had I done to merit such treatment?
Oh.
Well, in a recent review, I said that Miss Vaughn is no actress, but that is a fact and not debatable. This next is in capital letters.
Go ahead.
She cannot act. Neither can she dance, sing, nor move scenery. All legitimate reasons for being on a stage. What she does do is wiggle her fanny. Now that is also...
Deborah grabs the newspaper. Alfred gives her his reading glasses.
This too justifies being on the stage. It depends, to be blunt, on the fanny. When it is Miss Vaughn's fanny, she still has no reason for being on the stage.
Why, the lying slob! I'll match my fanny against any fanny in America.
I want you to, and I'm not alone in that. We've had a very busy box office since that came out.
Well, well, and well.
Exactly.
He hands her a drink.
I was going to close the show on Saturday, but I can't now.
Not as long as the public insists upon making up its own mind about your Fanny.
Now, in the newspaper office, Larry sits typing. A man walks up to his desk.
Here you are again, third week running. This time they call you ex-gentle, ex-genial, ex-Professor Lawrence McKay.
They cut down trees to make paper to print that.
The desk of Lawrence McKay. Who's calling, please? Mr. Perkins. Your publisher?
Tell him I'll call him tomorrow.
Mr. McKay will call you tomorrow. He's busy editing a poison pen column.
Larry grins.
You writing a book on all this jazz?
No, I'm writing a book called Presentations of Dramatic Art. But until all this jazz, nobody seemed to care.
He picks up the phone and dials.
Darling, how is the most ravishing woman on 62nd Street?
Angel! It's my son-in-law, Lawrence McKay, the critic. The one who got slapped.
In a pet shop.
No, dear, she isn't here yet. All right, sweetie, I'll tell her. Oh, an absolute darling and brilliant.
Mrs. Robinson, Jeremy seems depressed.
A bird.
Jeremy resented being bathed and he's looking for sympathy.
Oh.
Just ignore it.
Thank you.
The customer leaves. Kate and her sons.
Who are you?
Fiddle is splendid. Only say yes. Say you'll say yes.
Well, quiet, everybody. Give Grandma a chance.
Kate and I want quiet. I'll ask for it.
You want
now,
kitties?
What is the deal?
George and I need a new turtle. On account of ours got swept in the vacuum. And Gabe needs a new angelfish.
On account of my own got at.
But on the allowance we get, we can't save enough money. So we thought maybe you'd let us pay for it by working.
Fair enough. Here, first you can feed the fish. Now divide that up.
Grandma sees that.
Come on, sonny boy. Come on. Oh. Did you see Hector?
Hmm? There's your friend, sweetheart.
Hector, say hello to Adam.
A parrot.
Oh, yes, no, no.
Oh, he's learned a new word.
Making a grand total of two. My big boy.
Gabriel, don't get too close to that monkey. He squirts. When you were his age, all you could say was daddy.
Shh, keep it quiet, will you? Speaking of daddy, I'd better make...
Oh, Larry called.
Oh.
He'll meet you at the party. Oh. Who's giving this one?
Mona James.
The actress?
Our fourth this week.
I'm rapidly turning into a big, fat, soggy hors d'oeuvre.
Hey, what's with this mud anyway? I had to park a block away. You think he'd walk? Not on your life.
Joe carries in Hobo.
He's very badly trained, Joe.
Now, don't look at me. He's Larry's dog.
Well, he's with you more.
Oh, can't win. Listen, Mother, Joe will take me to the party and come back and drive you and the boys to the apartment, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, darling. Have a nice time. Mm.
Boys, come into my office. Front and center.
In a back room.
All right. Now listen, Grandma's doing me a big favor by taking care of you.
Oh, she likes it.
Never mind, she likes it. Just don't make it a night to remember. You hear?
Okay.
Oh, and don't forget to have the doorman take Hobo out.
Okay.
Where's Hobo?
Hobo?
Hobo.
Adam.
Daddy.
Behind the counter, little Adam talks to Hobo. Later, at a fancy party, Larry addresses a group of women.
Of course, there are interesting failures. There are prestige failures. And there are financial failures. But this is the sort of failure that gives failures a bad name.
Kate stands alone. Two women walk past her.
Kate, darling, I want you to meet Jane March.
How do you do?
Oh, Mr. McKay, I've been longing to meet you.
She writes plays. Oh, Kate, sometimes I loathe the theater. The lying, the buttering. If I had a simple life like yours, Kate, with all those wonderful kids. How many are there by now, darling? I lose track. You're at it so often.
Just four.
The girls are twins, aren't they?
The girls? Yes, Alana and...
Oh, George, George, darling, you need a drink. Oh, Angel, I must go and host. Oh, George, I'm so glad.
Mona sweeps away. Sighing, Kate folds her arms across her blue floral cocktail dress. She wanders through the crowded room, pausing near a piano player. He grins up at her.
Hello there.
Hello.
The piano player takes off his thick-rimmed glasses and sets them down on the white baby grand. He winks at Kate, then nods towards his bench. She smiles and sits next to him.
I've been watching you, hoping you'd come over.
You have?
Mm-hmm. You don't belong in this room full of spooks.
Kate curses her lips.
You're young, alive, beautiful. What are you doing later?
Smiling, she turns to him.
Thanks anyway, Sonny.
No dice?
Not a one.
Well, in that case, would you mind moving and giving somebody else a chance?
Kate blinks.
It's a pleasure.
She stands.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Kate plops down on a long settee, yawning as she glances around the party. Larry approaches with a drink.
I bet you thought I'd forgotten you.
Here. Darling, it isn't gin I need. It's a nice, thick, juicy steak with French fried potatoes. You do have a show to cover, you know, and it's...
Oh, there you are, you darling man. I was terrified you'd gone without telling me what to do with my third act.
Have you met my wife? Darling, this
is... How do you do? You will let me have him for a moment, won't you, dear? He's going to tell me what to do with my third act.
Go ahead, honey. Tell her what to do with her third act.
Now then, darling, I have a problem. Excuse me.
Now a poodle pads through the crowd and leaps onto Kate's lap.
Oh! Hello. Would you please get up off of me?
She smooths her hair.
Heaven's sake.
Kate touches her earlobe and frowns.
Mona?
Will you put this out for me, darling?
Mona.
Yes, dear?
I think your dog ate one of my earrings.
Oh, it's so small, I don't think it'll do her any harm.
Kate throws Mona a sharp look, then slumps on the settee. She pulls off her other earring and feeds it to the dog.
Be my guest, chum.
Now, Deborah Vaughn walks into the room wearing a slim red velvet skirt and matching jacket with a beaded top. She spies Larry at the far end of the room, then glances over to Mona. The hostess gives Deborah a sly nod.
Larry, darling, someone here to see you.
All eyes turn to Deborah, and the crowd parts as she slinks across the room toward Larry. Kate gapes at the starlet.
Dear Mr. McKay, don't be frightened. I have come not to slap, but to forgive.
She steps closer and Larry flinches. With parted lips, she kisses his cheek.
I insist on turning the other cheek.
Right.
She kisses the other.
Now that the smoke of battle has cleared, may I ask a question? Are you flexible enough to reconsider a perhaps hastily formed opinion?
I think so. I hope so.
Good.
Deborah pulls off her red velvet jacket and slings it across one bare shoulder. Turning, she sashays across the floor, her tight skirt clinging to her rear end. Kate's eyes narrow as she watches Deborah strut. Larry shrugs.
I was wrong.
Thank you.
Kate rolls her eyes and lets out a deep sigh. She stands, nudging the poodle off her lap, and weaves her way through the party. She finds Larry surrounded by a group of women. She catches his eye, then points to her watch. He nods. Kate walks into an elaborately decorated boudoir and moves to a pile of coats. Behind her, Alfred lounges on a divan, reading a newspaper. Pulling on her coat, Kate turns to leave. Alfred looks up and she stops short.
Alfred, what are you doing in here?
Reading about the mad McKays in the columns. Cocktail parties left and right, among those seen at El Morocco. Far cry from the simple souls I once knew. I'll bet Larry's loving this whole Magilla.
Now, why shouldn't he love it? Well, now, you know how shy and pushy he's always been. Why shouldn't he enjoy a little flurry?
Little flurry? Listen, Kate. Your own true lover set his foot on the first step of the down-elator.
The what?
Opposite number of the escalator. The down-elator. The one that leads to the place where all bad critics go.
Oh, come on.
For a critic, that first step is his first printed joke. People laugh. Whole new world opens up. He makes another joke and another. And then one day, along comes a joke that shouldn't be made, because the show he's reviewing is a good show. But the joke happens to be a good joke. And you know what? The joke wins.
That will never happen to Larry.
I don't know. It seems to me he's beginning to find himself a very amusing little fellow.
Alfred, you're just being a stinker.
That's right. And I shall go on being a stinker until I've evened up the score.
They return to the party.
Excuse me, please. Honey, if we don't go, we'll miss the first act.
Now, that might be a blessing to all concerned, especially the playwright.
Kate looks up sharply. She sees Alfred make a downward gesture with his hand. Later, Kate and Larry arrive home.
Who's your money on? Grandma or the monsters?
Larry grins at Kate. She lowers her gaze and he unlocks the front door. Inside, Grandma sits slumped in front of the television asleep. Kate shuts off the TV and her mother starts awake.
What happened?
Good guy just shot the bad guy.
Oh, that's nice. Did you hold the taxi?
Joe. He's waiting and he's making big talk about buying you a pizza.
Oh, then I better get my coat. Thank you, dear. Isn't it time you made some big talk about reading Joe's play?
Tomorrow. I'll give it all morning.
Were the boys much trouble?
Not a bit. You're the only one who can't handle them.
That's all right. Thanks, honey. I'll call you tomorrow.
Come on, Grandma. I'll ride you down the elevator.
I'll ride myself down in the elevator. You better go see what's ailing your wife. Anytime Kate won't pick a fight with me, something's wrong. Night, dear.
Larry walks into the bedroom where Kate undresses with her back to him. He grins under his thin mustache and moves up to help her. Unzipping her blue cocktail dress, he kisses the back of her neck.
Tickles.
That's a fine romantic reaction.
Better take a look at the boys.
Hey. Suppose you take a look at this boy.
She glances at him, then away.
Why do you always get embarrassed when you're angry with me?
Kate shrugs.
Uh-huh. And you are angry.
She shakes her head.
Confused.
So? Say.
I love you.
Just fine, because I love you.
She hugs him tightly.
Not exactly a tragic situation. I mean, we're not star-crossed lovers separated by feuding families, are we? We're home, we're in our own room. For once in their lives, all our children seem to be asleep. We're even married. What's the problem, huh?
Darling, did you slam the play tonight just to be funny, or did you really hate it?
I hated it, didn't you?
Yes, but that's not the point. Did you make up your mind in advance that you weren't going to like it?
Of course not. Why?
Because of what you said at the party.
What was that?
That it'd be a kindness to miss the first act.
Cocktail party talk, that's all. You know, people standing around, I was on. Look at me, Ma, I'm the town wit.
Honest?
Of course honest. Oh, Kate, is that what's been bothering you all night?
I just don't want you on that downer later, that's all.
The what?
Never mind. Get it.
They pull apart.
Oh, boy. It's a terrible thing when a man discovers that the mother of his children is an idiot.
He spins her into his arms.
I imagine I should be quite upset when I think about it. A few hours from now.
I'm thirsty.
Gabriel stands in the doorway.
Any of your brothers awake?
Sure, all of them. We chose to come and get you. I won.
You could ignore them.
Now you know and I know that's a no-no.
She pecks his nose.
See you around sometime.
Kate leaves with Gabriel. Morning. Larry sits in the living room reading Joe's manuscript. Behind him, Joe tiptoes out of the kitchen carrying a cup and saucer. Larry looks up.
Brought you some coffee.
Baby Adam watches from his cage. Okay. Joe steps over to him.
Hi, kid.
Okay.
Get a little stir crazy. Watch out.
Joe lifts the toddler out of his pen, bouncing Adam gently in his arms as he moves around the living room.
Daddy.
Larry sits up sharply.
Did he say daddy? To you?
Joe stops bouncing. Larry stands.
Yesterday he said it to Hobo. He's getting warmer, at least after all. Adam, I'm human. I'm daddy. Now let's get this clear. I'm daddy. Daddy?
Adam
daddy?
Turns away, squirming in Joe's arms.
Cut it out, will you, blabbermouth? You want to prejudice my case?
He returns Adam to his cage.
Big help you are.
Larry sits back down to read. Joe moves to his chair and leans over Larry's shoulder.
Could you at least give me a clue how you like it? Joe, what made you choose a biblical setting? You got something against the Bible? No, I mean, why did you set your play in Jerusalem when what you know about is New York? You see, every writer, and particularly an inexperienced one, should stick in his own backyard. Well, I took lots of writing courses at NYU nights. Nobody said there was a rule about it. Well, it should be. There's no easier way to look ridiculous than by trying to handle something you don't know about. Here, I'll give you an example. Here's Father Abraham ordering a sacrificial lamb.
Larry flips to a page and points.
I'll have a small sheep. And make it quick, boy. Sounds like some guy in Lindy's ordering a hot pastrami sandwich. You weren't trying to be funny, were you?
No, I wasn't trying to be funny.
Oh, believe me, you'd have the audience rolling in the aisles with that. The couple more up front...
Never mind. You had your laugh for the day.
Well, now, just a minute. If you're going to be a pro, you can't be sensitive.
I can't? Why not? Did you pass another rule? Who do you think you are, Moses handing down the commandments?
I may not be Moses. I'm the man you asked to read your play.
Oh, no, you're not. You're another fellow altogether. I wouldn't give you 2 cents for his opinion.
Or anyone else's. You're like every hysterical writer in the world. All you want is praise. Praise and more praise. Well, be my guest. You're a genius.
Joe starts out the door.
Mr. McKay?
You want Mr. McKay? Take Mr. McKay and wear him in good health.
Writers, they're all alike.
A woman in a turban and sunglasses strides into the apartment, followed by an elderly man. Larry answers the phone.
Hello?
Oh, Mr. Perkins. What's the problem?
The turbaned woman strolls past.
Well, how do you do? Well, that makes the publication date awfully close, doesn't it? Oh, you do, huh? Big splash? Yes, I guess I am a little better known now.
The woman holds a tape measure.
Yes, I agree. We should have much more bite than we...
Larry sees the woman measuring windows.
Hey, what are you doing?
Measuring.
9 feet.
Measuring? I'll call you back. Who are you two, anyway?
I'm Justin Withers from the rental office, which handles this building. And this is Miss Smith.
81 inches.
Taking a year's lease on the apartment.
On this apartment? But I live here with my wife and my 4 little boys.
Not as of 3 weeks from tomorrow. Your wife informed us months ago that you didn't care to renew.
52.
Oh, poor Mr. McKay. Had you forgotten?
Let's take a look at the bedroom.
Miss Smith, look, we can't possibly find a place to move to, not in 3 weeks. Couldn't you stay where you are for just a little while?
Why should I?
Well, as a favor, obviously. One human being to another.
Why should I do you a favor? I don't know you for madam.
Daddy?
What's with him, queer?
He's confused like I am. Mr.
McKay, I'm tired. I don't like being awake in the daytime. I know you're in a spot, but it's your spot. Let's take a look at that bedroom.
No, I'm sorry.
He blocks her path.
I can play tough, too, you know. I'm still the legal tenant, and your being here at all constitutes an invasion of privacy.
Not when it says in your lease that the apartment may be shown between 10 and 4 without notice. I don't play tough, Buster. Excuse me.
Larry stares after her. He turns to Mr. Withers.
Boy, that's a scary one.
I've been terrified all morning.
Larry's brow furrows.
What does she mean? She doesn't like being awake in the daytime. What is she, a vampire bat?
Mr. Withers.
Withers goes into the bedroom. Now, Kate and the boys enter.
Boy, have I had it.
So they can go barefoot till they're in college.
She plops into a chair.
My poor feet.
Oh, I just saw Joe pulling away, looking rather grim. What's ailing him?
Never mind about him. Something terrible's ailing us.
There's a strange lady in the bedroom. Let's go
see. Oh, David, there is not.
Oh, yes, there is. There's also a strange man. But it's the lady. What's terrible? She's a new tenant, and in exactly 3 weeks and 1 day, she's moving in here.
Kate jumps up.
Well, she's got a lot of nerve. The beds aren't even made.
She looks into the bedroom, then turns.
Larry, why would you let her...
She stares at him.
3 weeks and 1 day? Oh, Larry.
Oh, Kate! Why haven't you been looking, for heaven's sake?
Because every time I made a date to look, you canceled, for heaven's sake. I didn't want to find a house by myself.
Hands on hips, Kate paces.
It'd be like getting married by myself. We'll just have to ask her for more time, that's all.
I've asked her. I don't think she likes men.
But then I'll ask her.
Ms. Smith emerges.
I don't like women any better.
I don't want to be a squealer, but the boys are jumping on the beds.
Mr. Withers, maybe you have another apartment. Preferably a larger one. Perhaps on Park or Fifth.
Not even a smaller one. Nothing. Poor Mr. McKay and poor Mrs. McKay.
Withers follows Ms. Smith out.
Now, why did you ask him about an apartment? You know we don't want an apartment, we want a house. And we don't want it on Fifth or Park, we want it in the country. We always have.
Well, it's just that...
It's just that what?
Well, I've been thinking about this, and it seems to me that if
you mean you've been thinking about this without even telling me?
I do have the right to think, don't I?
Well, I know, but we haven't even thought about a new lampshade without discussing it.
Well, I'm discussing this right now. At least I'm trying to.
Kate crosses her arms.
Okay. Go ahead. Discuss.
Okay. Well, it's just that in the past few months, things have changed a little.
What's changed? The girl slapped you at Sardi's. You got a little publicity. Now we go to the kind of parties we used to hate. That's all that's changed.
Not quite all. My publisher thinks that my book may become a bestseller. I've had scores of offers to write articles for what are known as class magazines, and I've been invited to appear on a television show whose guest last...
Hey, guess what? I did a double back somersault!
Mazel tov, whose guest last week was an ex-president of the United States.
Mazel tov to you. Larry, what has that got to do with our moving to the country?
I like living in the city now. I like being part of the theater. I like being wanted and accepted by the people who count. By important people.
Names. The kind you used to run from.
Oh, maybe I was afraid they'd run, so I ran first.
He paces the room, tugging at his pants waist. Kate fixes him with a steady gaze.
Is this what you wanted all along? To be a name?
If you mean to accomplish things, to have your opinions count.
To have your jokes quoted.
To have a sense of importance, you bet that's what I want. Is there more virtue in being a nonentity? Is that why you're trying to keep me one? Always needling, belittling, carping at every good thing that happens to me. Will you stop jumping on those beds?
Larry looks at Kate. They lock eyes briefly, then turn awkwardly away. Kate steps slowly over to Adam's cage, her knee-length black skirt billowing around her slender legs. She picks up a toy horse. Adam reaches through the bars.
Daddy?
Larry stands at a window, his back to the room. Kate glances at him, then bows her head.
Would you like a cup of coffee?
He turns from the window.
I'd love one.
Can we jump just once more? If we're careful, we want to make a pyramid.
Yes, of course, Davy.
It's okay, come on, it's okay!
David races back into the bedroom. In the sunlit kitchen, Kate takes saucers and two cups from a tiny china hutch. Larry enters somberly, his eyes downcast. They meet at the table.
I'm really not trying to cut you down. And I'm so proud of you. I always have been.
They hug.
Darling, I know. We both said things we didn't mean.
He kisses her. Larry looks up.
Don't go.
She pulls him close.
If they broke any important bones, they'll yield. Oh, darling, I didn't mean to be so selfish.
She nuzzles his neck.
Of course, it's fun for you, being lion hunted. Of course you want to stay in the middle of it.
But it could be fun for you, too, meeting interesting people, making new friends.
Darling, interesting people don't want to make friends with housewives.
I wish you could call yourself a housewife. You're so much more.
So is every other housewife.
She smiles and pulls away.
Anyway, what matters right now is you. You are becoming a very important man. I act as if it were an inconvenience. Nagging you, grizzling about what I want.
Kate pours coffee.
I can't just ignore what you want.
You should. It's all I deserve.
Well, let's not go overboard.
Well, I wasn't being completely selfish. I think the country would be marvelous for the boys.
She points to Hobo.
Him, poor thing. He's never even seen a tree without a railing around it. And I honestly did think about you, darling. Really, I did. I don't know how you work in this apartment with all of us on top of you every minute.
I could work at the office.
She pouts.
No. The nicest part about being married to a writing type fella is that he's around a lot.
She smiles sweetly.
There I go, being selfish again. Your work has to come first. We all live on it. Parasites. That's what we are. All of us.
Larry stares at her thoughtfully. He breaks into a grin.
Kate.
Huh?
You are using what are known as feminine wiles on me. You've never done that before.
Larry!
And you have absolutely no talent for it.
She hits him.
But if you want to go to the country badly enough to put on this perfectly nauseating act. Okay, we go.
She hugs him.
Only what sort of a house we're going to find in 3 weeks with very little money. Four small boys and one large dog. I just don't know.
Now, The McKay family stands in a circular drive staring balefully towards a dilapidated Gothic Tudor mansion. Turrets rise from the steep roof of the three-story monstrosity. Above a sagging entryway, latticed floor-length windows are dotted with broken panes of glass.
How do you like it, huh?
It's like out of Ivanhoe.
It's much older than that.
How come it's so big?
Because we couldn't afford anything smaller. Come on, let's take a look around, huh?
Kate ushers the children up a winding pathway toward the entrance. Her mother trails behind them, followed by Larry and the housekeeper, Maggie. Sun-scorched grass and brown scrub line the stone pathway. They push through the front door, stepping cautiously into an aging hallway. Boxes and broken furniture clutter the bare wood floor. Kate smiles, gesturing brightly around the hall. Her hair catches in the cobwebs, hanging from a naked chandelier. She leads them through an archway into a large, trash-strewn living room. Looking all around, they file across the dusty floor, past a tarnished suit of armor. Kate rolls up her sleeves and gestures to the others. Now, a montage of scenes. Upstairs, Kate tries to open a window, and it drops out of its frame. Carrying an armload of curtains, Larry falls through the floor. Elsewhere, the boys help clear debris from a room. George rolls a tire through a trap door. Grandma peels wallpaper to reveal a painted mural of a man. She sees the man's naked legs and looks up. She folds the paper back down. Now, Hobo pads across the dusty floor to an indoor fountain. He sniffs at the rim and meets a frog. Hobo scurries away. He paces in nervous circles. In the kitchen, Maggie opens a pantry door. A flock of birds flies out. Now, in the living room, Kate rests in an armchair, surrounded by furniture from their city apartment. Nearby, Hobo sits with Adam in his wooden cage. Larry enters with a briefcase.
Well, yeah, I am about to start a long life as a commuter.
Kate stretches.
Oh, listen to the kids out there. They're having a ball.
You don't hear any happy sounds bubbling out of him.
He walks to Adam's cage.
Huh?
Oh, great. Probably take a whole year to work him up to Daddy again. Say, Daddy?
Don't you worry about Adam. He'll be just fine. The worst is over. Honey, sit down a minute, will you? Let's talk before you go.
Okay, just a minute.
Maggie enters.
I'll give him some soup and cornflakes and get him down.
How about you, Maggie? Do you think the worst is over?
Hasn't even begun.
She takes Adam.
Come on, Smiley. Cheer up. I'll let you scatter some cornflakes.
Larry rests on a couch next to Kate. The two of them sit with their feet propped up on a coffee table.
You.
They look up.
Right on in. Mom and Dad are in the living room.
They jump up. Larry tries to run, but Kate grabs him.
I'm afraid we're the Welcome to Hooton Committee. Your children showed us in.
Oh, please come in. Oh, dear, we're such a mess around here. I'm Kate McKay, and this is my husband, Larry.
We know all about you. How do you do? I'm Mrs. Hunter.
Mrs. Hunter?
This is Dr. Sprout.
Dr. Sprout wears her short hair slicked back.
Dr. McQuarrie.
How do you do? A clerical collar peeks out from Dr. McQuarrie's tweed jacket.
Well, we just wanted to say hello and bring you these.
And to put the bite on Mr. McKay.
Excuse me, are you a lady or a man?
George.
I'm a veterinarian, Sonny. It's somewhere in between.
Dr. Sprout grins.
That's very interesting. George, would you please take those out to Maggie?
Be a good daisies.
Boy. Gabe, you go with George. You too, David.
Didn't even open my mouth. Boy. She's not getting any more kisses out of me in a hurry.
Thank you. Won't you please come in and sit down?
Well, we don't want to take up any of your time.
I wanted to ask Larry.
Oh, yes, with some help with our local dramatic society, called, unfortunately, the Hoot and Holler Players. Yes, isn't it? However, we're starting work on our annual show, which involves a lot of homegrown talent and a worthy cause. Now, to get to the pitch, we need your help.
I see. I'll give you my wife. She just loves to join things.
Well, we'd be delighted to have her, but...
But what we really need is a brand new play. And we thought with your contacts...
Oh, I see. Well, I'm afraid... Hey, how about a musical based on the first two books of the Old Testament? A
Oh, it's like a musical, but the Old Testament?
What's the matter? You got something against the Bible?
Larry, Hobo has to go out right now.
Yes,
dear.
Come, Hobo, dear.
He leads Hobo out of the room.
He's very amusing.
I laugh almost all the time.
Hobo meets a cat outside. Hobo turns and leaps into Larry's arms. Larry sets him down, and Hobo runs right back into Adam's cage.
This house, you're turning that dog into a nervous wreck.
Here's some tranquilizers. Give him two a day. Won't care where he is.
Thank you.
Save a couple for me, honey.
Well, I think we'd better be going. We're probably at the dreadful end of a dreadful day.
Oh, we love it.
Well, I do hope you can persuade Mr. McKay to find something for
us. Well, I'll do my best.
Bye, Mr. McKay.
Goodbye, Mr. McKay. Bye.
The minister approaches Larry.
I read your reviews.
Oh?
Yes.
He leaves. Larry tries to coax Hobo out from under a covered piece of furniture. Bye. Kate walks up.
Oh, come on. It wouldn't have killed you to find them a play.
Amateurs bore me. You find him a play.
Well, don't worry. I intend to.
Well, that's just fine. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll have to go and play with the grown-up people.
Grandma enters with George.
You know what he did with those daisies? He ate them.
What? He ate them?
He didn't tell me not to. Anyway, I didn't eat them all. They were full of ants.
Oh, George.
The fastidious, ain't he?
Well, that's so funny. I don't know what to do for him. Or to him.
Oh, let nature take its course. Go on, George. Have some soup and wash it down.
Right away now.
Larry, you'll be late for your opening. Yeah.
Well, you mustn't do that. How would people know what to think tomorrow?
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I was just beginning to feel guilty about leaving. Good night.
Grandma follows Kate into the living room, hands on hips.
The first time he goes off alone, and you have to make sure he goes off mad.
I know. But he keeps making those snide little cracks.
And what do you expect when you drag a man 70 miles from where he wants to be?
I dragged him. Mother, it wasn't just my idea to move to the country, you know. We've only planned it for 10 long years. Besides, he needs to get away from New York, and right now, for his own good. Don't worry. He'll love it. And he'll love this house, too. I'm going to make this place so beautiful, he'll have to love it.
I wouldn't push him too far. Just let him stop hating it.
Now, the Italian restaurant. Larry sits alone. He slumps with his head in his hand, toying idly with a breadstick. A glass of Chianti sits untouched before him. Pete, the waiter, brings a bill to a table nearby, and three men in suits slide out of their seats, revealing Deborah Vaughn. The starlet pays the bill and stands, wearing hot pants and a striped top under a fur coat. Spying Larry, Deborah's brow furrows. She confers briefly with her gentleman companions and they leave. Turning back to Larry, Deborah's eyes narrow in appraisal. She sits down across from him and waves, jangling her silver charm bracelet. Larry blinks, half rising. Deborah smiles.
Deborah Vaughn, a no-actress type.
Oh.
I thought you might be ill.
No, I was just sleepy. It's good of you not to give me a hot foot while you had the chance.
We made up, remember?
Oh, that was in public, remember?
Let's do it again. In private.
She offers her hand and they shake.
There.
She shrugs out of her coat.
Friends last. Pals.
Chums.
You know something, chum? That slap I slapped you did you a world of good. You're much more attractive since you turned into a louse.
I'm utterly impervious to flattery. Still, I might buy you a cup of coffee without loss of principle. Pete?
Deborah gives him a doe-eyed look.
Where's Madame? Alfred tells me you're never without her.
Well, that doesn't mean I'm on a leash.
Come, you're talking to Mother.
The waiter.
Yes, Mr. McKay? Oh, Pete, bring some coffee and another wine glass, please. Anything else you'd like?
She shakes her
head. Just a little careless chatter.
How's it, the missus?
Oh, she's fine.
Pete eyes Deborah.
And the four boys?
They're fine, too. So's the dog.
Oh, that's good.
They're all fine.
That's nice.
I'm catching a train at 1:10.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he was just settling in.
Pete throws Deborah a tight-lipped glare and leaves.
A train to where?
Houghton, on the Hudson. We moved in there this morning, because I'm so lucky.
Well, well, well. Isn't that interesting? Never saw the leash yet that could stretch from Houghton to here.
You driving at something?
Naturally. I'm thinking of going...
Pete returns with the coffee. Deborah eyes him coolly, her brow arched. He leaves.
On the make for you.
Larry's eyes widen.
Shock technique, effective, isn't it?
It's staggering, but why?
The usual. I like the way you look.
Since when?
Does it have to be retroactive?
She pours wine.
Oh, no, chum. If you think I'm kidding, you're wrong.
She slaps the cork back into the wine bottle.
Embarrassed?
Larry lowers his gaze.
Why?
I like my wife.
What's that got to do with this?
She looks at him and her jaw drops. She leans in.
Don't tell me you've got morals.
Larry averts his gaze, then shrugs.
Well, that's that.
She sinks back in her seat.
Go to sleep. I won't bother you.
She rolls her eyes and takes a sip of her wine. Later, Larry returns home. A single lamp by the door illuminates the bare wood hallway. Boxes line the walls. Larry shuts off the lamp. Upstairs, he finds a note taped to a door. He pulls out a lighter, and it casts a soft glow over the cursive writing. The note reads, "Darling, I'm sorry I acted like a ball and chain. I love you, Kate. P.S. If Hobo's on the bed, don't throw him out. He had a nightmare." Larry opens the door and glances into a bedroom. Kate and the boys sleep in two twin beds. Kate shares the nearest with Adam and Hobo. She stirs slightly, draping an arm across her son. Larry shuts the door. Morning. Larry sleeps in his clothes on the living room couch. Hobo walks up and Larry bats him away. The shaggy terrier trots over to an open floor-length window. Outside, a squirrel looks up. Hobo balks and runs, leaping onto Larry.
What's the matter, man? What is it?
The boys enter.
Okay, he's up! Hurry up, Dad! Get dressed! We've got to start school tomorrow! Okay, Willie!
Do we just
want to
know what
the coach is going to start
school tomorrow?
Larry, you'll have to pick me up a timetable on your way to school.
I have a timetable, Mother.
Oh, all right.
Good morning, darling. Oh, fellas, now stop pestering Daddy. Now, come on, you can go on outside and
cook.
But keep clean.
Okay.
You poor baby.
Yeah. What happened?
What do you mean, what happened?
What do you mean? What do I mean, what happened?
Oh, he's shaking again. What happened?
What do you mean? Well, let's not start that again.
Better give him another tranquilizer.
She opens a bottle.
How come you were so late last night?
I fell asleep, Pete's, and then I ran into Deborah Vaughn.
Come on, Hobo.
She's a funny girl.
Oh?
Know what she said?
No. Oh, no. You're going to take this pill. What'd she say?
Maybe it just sounded funny.
Take it. All right, if that's the way you want to act, help yourself, buddy. You better get dressed or we'll be late. Oh, before I forget, your publisher called, and they want four chapters by next week for the illustrator.
But I'm nowhere near ready.
Well, the minute we get back, you can get to work. The study's messy, but quiet.
Where are we going?
Oh, darling, school. We start the boys this morning, and they want both parents there the first day. You know, full family participation.
Larry grabs the bottle of dog tranquilizers and pops one into his mouth.
Maggie, bring the baby!
He feeds a pill to Hobo. Now, the McKay family sits in the principal's office. Gabriel scratches.
Psst. Stop it.
I got an itch.
The gray-haired principal looks up from some papers.
The second grade is normal for George and Gabriel, but in the fifth, the average age is 10. David is only 9.
Well, in New York, they seem to think he was quite bright.
The women turn to David. He picks his nose.
David.
What's the matter?
Yeah, what's the matter?
Kate slumps as a woman enters.
Miss Bonnie, George and Gabriel will go to Miss Johnson's room. David goes to Mrs. Von Olsen.
In New York, we didn't have any homework.
Well, now you know. All right, kids, on your way now. With our best wishes.
Come on, boys.
Good
have
luck,
a good
fellas.
Day. And I'll pick you up after school. Be good boys. Bye.
Will you sit down for a moment, please?
Oh, yes, of course.
Kate and Larry sit.
It is our policy to draw school and home closer together. Therefore, we ask our parents to volunteer for at least one school activity. Will it be convenient for you to supervise an after-school play hour on Thursdays from 3 to 4:30?
Oh, yes, perfectly convenient.
Good. Now, as to you, Mr. McKay.
No, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm going to volunteer.
Mr. McKay is very busy right now.
Oh, no, it's not that. I just don't agree with the policy. Shall I go on?
Please do.
Well, in my opinion, elementary schooling, the main purpose of it is to keep the children out of the parents' hair, and vice versa. Those hours when the kids are away at school have for generations been sacred to American parents.
Kate's eyes widen. She shakes her head.
I don't have the faintest intention of giving up that freedom. Furthermore,
later,
if you could tell me,
he said it was moral blackmail and he wouldn't buy it.
She cleans with her mother.
Boy, what a fine first impression we're making. I'd like to gag him.
Kate!
In the cluttered study.
Kate!
Yes, dear?
Kate, you've got to make them stop.
Make who stop what? The carpenter.
Can't they work in some other part of the house today?
Well, yes, they can, but you'll want it quiet tomorrow, too, won't you?
Dear, the plumber's here. Where do you want him to start?
Well, tell him I'll be there in a minute.
Get him a hammer while he's waiting.
Kate and Larry look down at a pile of boxes and furniture which clutter the center of the room. Slowly, they pick their way through the cardboard maze, scanning the floor. Larry bends down between waist-high stacks of boxes, tossing several magazines left and right in his search. He picks up the phone. He hands it to Kate.
It's your darling Dr. McQuarrie.
Good morning, Dr. McQuarrie. Oh, yes. Yes, I'd love to be involved.
Larry makes a face.
Well, I can paint scenery or make costumes or whatever you need.
She shoots him a look.
Well, yes, I did some acting in college, not very much.
Larry pantomimes. Kate glares.
As a matter of fact, I wasn't too bad. Anyway, I'd love to try out. Oh, the play.
Now, you keep me out of this. I'm neither a playwright, an agent, nor a club woman.
Dr. McQuarrie, I don't think that'll be necessary. Really, I don't. You see, I have my own contacts in the theater. Suppose I see what I can do and I'll call you later. All right? You're very sweet. Bye-bye.
She hangs up and turns to Larry with pursed lips.
You're very sweet, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just panicked about work, that's all. I'm sorry.
He sits back down at his typewriter. Biting her lip, Kate swivels toward him.
Look, this place is going to be Bedlam, USA for at least another week. It has to be. So I have an idea. Why don't you go away?
Like where?
Like a big luxurious hotel in New York, full of silence and room service. You could live like a king, work like a dog, and come home to house beautiful. And no carpenters. What do you think?
It sounds wonderful, but isn't it running out on you?
Well, if you won't get mad, I'll tell you a secret. I'd pay someone to remove you from these premises.
I'm being a pain, huh?
Oh, the worst. Really?
It's not that I don't love you, but when does the next train leave?
Mother's going into town, and I have to go to Macy's. So you go pack a bag, and I'll drive us all in and myself back.
As I said, it's not that I don't love you, but...
He pecks her nose.
Bye.
Larry climbs over a stack of boxes and exits the room. Kate smiles softly, staring down at the floor. She nods her head, then picks up the phone. Her mother enters.
Operator? Operator, I'm calling Murray Hill 39970, New York City.
Are you out of your mind sending him off alone?
Kate shakes her head.
Are you sure you have thought this out?
Kate nods, smiling.
Alfred North, please.
Oh, well,
Mrs. McKay calling. Thank you, Alfred.
Are you sure you shouldn't review it?
Kate nods.
Oh, I don't know you as well as I did when you were a child, but you were one of the dumbest children I ever met.
Kate stares.
A girl's best friend is her mother. Hello, Alfred? How are you, dear? Good. Alfred, I have a favor to ask of you. Yes, I'm looking for a play. A new play for the...
Kate, if I had anything good, I'd do it myself. Why don't you ask your husband? Well, he may be neither an agent, a playwright, nor a club woman, but he certainly... Hold on a second. Martha!
A gray-haired woman enters Alfred's large, richly furnished office.
Martha, I want you to think back. Way back to when we first started producing. Larry McKay sent us a play, remember?
She takes off her glasses, biting the earpiece thoughtfully.
So Passion Dies, a tragedy by Lawrence McKay. Sure, we still have a bunch of copies. They're in the drop-dead file.
Get them. Kate, I may have something for you.
Really? What kind of something?
Oh, all right.
Surprise me, then. Well, if you like it, I like it. Well, now listen, Alfred, there's one problem. They want to start rehearsals right away, so I'll have to get hold of it fast. Well, I'm coming into town today.
Look, if you're coming in anyway, how about a drink at the Colony? Macy's?
Later, in a fabric department, a clerk brings a bolt of striped yellow cloth to Kate.
I found it, Mrs. McKay. This one looks like you.
Ooh, that's pretty.
Can't you see this in a seafoam green room with an alabaster bowl on a dark coffee table? And for accent, one shining red apple.
Oh, yes, yes, I can see that.
She pauses.
Of course, if the kids ate the apple, all we'd have is an alabaster bowl with an apple core in it.
Well, you could get a marble out.
They'd eat that, too. Oh, no, I just have to make up my mind here. I think it's one of these two, definitely.
Alfred walks up as the clerk rolls his eyes.
Oh, Alfred, which of these two fabrics do you like best?
Huh? I hate them both.
Oh, so do I.
A man walks past with a bolt of white cloth.
Oh, hey, mister!
She runs toward him and tugs the bolt from his grip. She returns.
I couldn't describe it, but the minute I saw it, I knew it was...
I'll measure off what you need and charge and send it. It's been a pleasure, Mrs. McKay. Thank you.
He takes the fabric.
He's just afraid I'll change my mind. Coward.
Oh, Alfred, the play. Oh, you're a dear. What's that? Ghostly Music by Irving O'Reilly. Oh, that sounds marvelous. You know, of course, there's only one performance to make money for the Hooton Hospital.
Well, one performance may be enough. I say, Kate, Larry's such a terror downer these days, sir. Don't let him read this.
Oh, he won't even be around. Say, why don't you come down to garbage disposals with me, huh?
All right.
Larry's living here at the plaza till the house is ready.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred, why don't you call him? Really, it's time you two made up.
Not quite yet. Why not skip garbage disposals and have a drink with me?
Haven't you heard? I'm no longer a member of the cocktail party set. I'm the lady in Hooton with the rich full lunch.
An elevator arrives.
Down, please.
Kate steps in first. The conductor blocks Alfred's way.
Next car, please.
Inside the first car, Kate speaks to a tall man's back.
Oh, it's just wonderful. And it isn't just getting a house ready and then the boys settled. It's much more than that. It's putting down roots in the community, making a niche for us, you know?
People stare.
Now and the McKays are really going to belong somewhere.
She picks lint from the tall man's suit. Outside, Alfred joins her.
While you're living the rich, full life at Hooton, what's Larry doing at the plaza?
Oh, I sent him there. As a matter of fact, I ordered him there. It was the smartest thing I ever did.
Alfred eyes her. Later, in a hotel room.
Hooton, New York, 346.
Wearing a silken robe, Larry plops onto his unmade bed in a spacious suite. At home, Kate works in paint-splattered overalls.
Hello, Maggie. Is Mrs. McKay at the PTA, the Garden Club, the Dramatic Society?
I am in none of those places. I am in your study mixing paint. You can hang up now, Maggie. Well, now that's a silly question. I'm mixing paint because I didn't like the paint the idiot painters mix. See? How are you, darling? You didn't. 3 chapters in 1 week? Oh, that's marvelous. Oh, I'm proud of you. You what?
I said, I miss you. What do you mean, when did that happen? It happened when I typed the last word in the 3rd chapter. Well, don't argue about it. I'll just pop on the 11:30 and come right down and have lunch with me at Sardi's. That's my good girl.
Later, Kate sits at a dressing table, adjusting the scoop-neck collar of a gold-patterned dress. Little Adam tromps around behind her in a pair of high heels. Kate puts on a pair of diamond earrings. She stands.
Sweetheart, come on, give Mommy your shoes.
She lifts Adam out of the patent leather heels.
Cookie.
No, darling. Mommy's just going to go into New York and have lunch with Daddy. And I'll be right back, okay?
She takes his small hand and he smiles.
Okay. Mrs. McKay! Mrs. McKay! The upholstery!
She lifts Adam into her arms.
Come on, my big boy. Oh!
Kate hurries to a dresser and collects a pair of black gloves.
Hobo? Come on, Hobo!
Downstairs, Maggie rolls out the cloth from Macy's. Sunlight pours into the newly painted room as Kate enters.
How do you like that new material, Mag?
I always have.
Huh? What do you mean?
Maggie moves to the couch and lifts its dark slipcover to reveal the same white fabric.
Well, I knew I liked it the minute I saw it.
Maybe you can take it back.
No, I wouldn't dare. Well, we'll cover the chairs with it, the club chairs.
Okay.
Kate looks at the fabric.
Oh, for heaven's sake. It was that idiot salesman. He unnerved me. Him and his alabaster apple.
Okay, lady, that'll be about 10 days on the east.
3 days.
Oh, no.
Oh, please.
5 days.
Okay, take it away, pushover. Thanks.
Kate finds the phone under a drop cloth.
Hello? This is she speaking. What? I'll be right there. They want me at school. It's one of the boys.
Now, George's head is stuck in a chair.
Now, control yourself, Mrs. McKay. It's very simple to saw it off.
No. I'm sorry, Miss Yule. I've just never told him not to put a chair on his head. May I have that? All right, clever. Brace yourself.
She starts to saw.
Hey!
Shut up, stupid.
Now, at Sardi's.
You want some crackers or something just to nibble on? You shouldn't get blasted.
No.
Alone in a red booth, Larry chuckles as the waiter replaces his martini. In a nearby booth, Deborah Vaughn spots him, then smiles as she studies Larry's profile. She gets up and, swaying her hips, struts over to his table. Deborah slips languidly into the seat beside him.
Stood up?
No.
You always have a martini and an old-fashioned for lunch?
My wife. She probably missed her train.
Or maybe somebody told her that we ran into each other last week.
I did. I didn't worry at all.
Bless your stupid little heart. There's nothing I like better than an understanding wife. And she's turned you loose for a while. I hear from Alfred Grapevine North.
No, I wish you'd cut this out.
Why should it bother you if I don't bother you?
You don't.
You're a liar.
You just make me nervous, that's all.
That'll do nicely for the time being.
Deborah shifts seductively in her seat, eyeing Larry with an amused grin.
You can relax now. I'm leaving. I have a performance to give.
You've been giving one.
Just a warm-up for a cold critic.
No, I'm not cold. I'm just not available.
Don't be silly, sweetie.
She pats his arm.
Everyone's available who isn't dead.
She leaves. Later, Larry enters his hotel suite.
Hello? Oh, hello, Kate. No, it's perfectly all right. Doesn't matter. Just thought perhaps you might have called up to say you'd changed your mind. What? Which one? George? Is he all right? Got his head caught in what? Well, as long as his brains are intact and you promise to come and have dinner with me, I forgive you.
He unties his shoes.
Oh, skip it. Skip the rehearsal.
Now, look, darling, honestly, I can't. But, Larry, I'm playing the lead, and if I don't show up, there's no rehearsal. David, stop it. Stop it. David. Now, don't make me feel bad. Will you call me tomorrow? Early? Because I love you, that's why, you dope.
Daytime. Larry pays a cabbie, then walks toward his house past a truck labeled Hooten Paint Company. Three workmen in white overalls exit as he mounts the front steps. Larry tries the door. He feels around in his pockets, then turns back toward the driveway.
Hey! Hey!
The truck drives off. Larry scans the brick front of the house, then strides purposefully toward a side window. The window's shining new panes glitter in the sunlight, and the lower half is open just a crack. Larry slides it up further and crawls through. He turns to shut the window. Stripes of white paint cover the back of his gray suit. Larry searches the house.
Kate? Kate? Maggie? Maggie? Boys?
With a furrowed brow, he walks into the living room, pausing in its columned archway. Paintings are stacked against one wall and the furnishings are sparse. Larry makes his way toward a telephone next to the couch. He dials.
Operator, I know this sounds silly, but do you know where the Houghton Dramatic Society rehearse? Would you put me... Well, how do you know there's nobody there? Oh, you're in the play.
He sees paint on his jacket.
Would you put me through to the Houghton Primary School, please?
Larry twists to look at his paint-smeared pants. In an office, a young girl with pigtails answers the phone.
Yeah, this is school. Huh? It closes 3 o'clock, school. No, there isn't nobody here but me, and I gotta go home now.
The girl walks outside, past a playground where Kate assembles a group of children into 4 lines.
Straight. Girls here, boys here. 2 and 2. Nice and straight. What's your partners? Gabe, honey? Give me the
ukulele. Ukulele in hand, Kate strolls past the rows of boys and girls.
After the first April showers, flowers appear everywhere. And as they bloom, their fragrant perfume tell us that spring's in the air. Please, don't eat the daisies.
Kate leads the boys around in a circle. The girls circle in the opposite direction.
Here am I waiting and anticipating the kisses that I'll get from you.
Now, hand in hand, the children form a ring around Kate. They skip in a circle.
Daisies, don't eat the daisies. Please, please. I'm so romantic, but I'm getting frantic. Wondering what you're gonna do. Do you love me?
Do you love me?
Do you love me?
Love me.
That's what I'm longing to know. Do you love me?
Do you love me?
Love me a lot. You'll prove it by letting the daisies grow. Oh, please, please, don't eat the daisies. Don't eat the daisies, please. Supposing it showers while you're eating flowers, the hours will be wasted away. Please don't eat the daisies today.
Kate leads the children in a skipping gait around the playground. Adam watches them through the metal bars of a jungle gym. Now, at the McKay residence. Alone in the living room, Larry checks his watch, then strides to the front door.
Thank you very much.
He opens the door, and the boys burst in.
Hi! Hi. You gonna stay?
Well, darling, we
come out before
here.
Jackson up.
What happened to your suit? Oh, what a marvelous surprise! Oh, don't you have an opening tonight? Say hi to Daddy.
I got here long ago when the century was young, and I had to climb in through a window, which accounts for my suit. And it was a wonderful surprise for me, too, spending the whole afternoon with a telephone book trying to find my wife. And yes, I do have an opening tonight, to which I'm going right now. And perhaps someday, when you have nothing better to do, you might try to explain just where you've been all day. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Kate sets Adam down in the hall.
Oh!
She flings the door open.
I was having a rendezvous with Rock Hudson. Me, David, George, Gabriel, Adam, and Hobo. All of us!
Later, Grandma washes dishes in the kitchen.
Hi. Hi, darling. How'd rehearsal go?
Fine. Larry call?
No, he's mad. He won't call. Why don't you call him?
Kate bangs her purse on the kitchen table. She pulls out a chair and sits down gingerly.
Oh. What's the matter?
Oh. 10 years of not dancing. Too much bone in my bones. How'd I get older than you?
No character, that's why.
I guess it's on television. Daddy!
The women stare.
Daddy!
Kate rushes into the living room.
I tried to bring together impossible interviews.
Larry and Deborah are on TV.
Our feuding days are over.
Yes, like in the movies. Hate has turned to love.
Well, let's say it's turned to friendship.
My friend is a cautious man with an unnatural fear of coffee houses and guitars. That's a private joke.
Deborah winks to the camera.
Very funny.
You can see him anytime. I want to see Frankenstein.
Is there a difference? Sneaking out with that two-bit vamp.
Sneaking out? On a TV screen?
He's been seeing her off that screen. Just happened to run into Deborah.
Well, as long as he tells you about
it. Oh, sure. An honest truck driver cheats on his wife. He's polite enough to keep it to himself.
In the kitchen.
Eggheads. The diploma boys. They tell you everything. That way, if you're jealous, you're wrong.
Kate, listen to me.
Oh, Mother, please don't give me that you made him move bit.
I have no intention of beating a dead horse.
Well, if you mean me, thanks.
Kate Robinson, you stop being so fresh.
I'm sorry.
Up to now, I don't think anything has happened between Larry and that nasty-looking girl.
She is nasty-looking, isn't she?
But if you go on neglecting him, something will happen. Did you see the dress she had on?
Falsies.
He doesn't know it. I hope. Did you see her makeup? Her hair?
Mother, what am I supposed to do? Wear a black lace negligee to the supermarket?
No, that is not what you're supposed to do. I'll tell you what you're supposed to do. You pull yourself together, get this house in order. Get on the phone, call Larry, tell him you miss him, you love him, and you want him to come home.
I will not. I have been married to Larry McKay for over 10 years, and if I have to start playing tricks to keep him...
What do you mean, tricks? Don't you miss him? Don't you love him? Don't you want him to come home?
Blinking, Kate nods. Now, in a dimly lit coffee house, couples hunch over small tables in a smoke-filled room. They take long, slow drags from their rolled cigarettes. A band plays in one corner. In the back of the room, Deborah sits across from Larry. She slouches petulantly in her chair. Larry scans the room.
This is a strange place for you to choose.
It's a place, like all the others, full of strangers.
Oh, you really do have the blues. What's the matter? Do you want to say?
Just sad. And adding up my life.
Well, you should add up very well. You're awfully successful.
That's what I wanted. Rake in the loot. Let Helen Hayes have the theater named after her. All of a sudden, it doesn't seem enough. I go to the theater. I work. I sit over a drink or a cup of coffee because I don't want to go home. And then I go home. And there's nothing there. I'm alone. By choice, of course, but... Well, we don't always like what we've chosen.
You know, it's funny, I always think of you at big, gay, noisy parties surrounded by big, gay, noisy people.
Good act, isn't it?
So is this one.
Her eyes widen.
Sad music, guitars, the dark coffee house, beautiful woman, glamorous, successful, and lonely, lonely, lonely. Oh, Deborah.
Well, this one isn't polished yet. I mean, it's the first time I've tried it. And it almost got you. Admit, almost.
Yeah, way back in the section where you went home and there was nobody there.
Oh, I think I'll try a whole new tack next time. Why don't you meet me, say, Friday, just to see what I can come up with, huh?
No, I think I'll, go up to Hooton instead.
Run, sheep, run.
And live to fight another day.
Daytime in Hooton. Larry gets out of the cab and pays the driver. He pauses to admire the house's neatly trimmed front lawn. Inside, Maggie opens the front door.
Oh, she'll kill herself.
What?
You're not supposed to be here till 7.
Oh.
He looks around.
Hey, Donovan, isn't house beautiful? And Maggie beautiful?
She poses.
Wait till you see your study.
Yeah?
He walks inside.
Well, well, well.
You know what she got you? An electric pencil sharpener. And the big boiled lobster for dinner.
Oh, she hates boiled lobster.
I know.
Oh, Sam, there's something missing. Like the patter of lots of feet. Not to mention the click of hobo's toenails.
In the living room.
Where is everyone?
beautiful.
Isn't it pretty?
Really beautiful.
The missus sent Hobo and the boys home with Grandma. She thought it was about time that you had a weekend alone. The both of you.
Oh, where is she, Maggie?
At a rehearsal.
Oh,
now, don't get excited, Mr. McKay. It was supposed to be tonight, but she told them unless they switched to the afternoon and she was finished by 7, she wouldn't be there. So how's about it? I'll get the ice out, make you a drink, and you look around.
No, thank you, Maggie. I think I'll drop in at the rehearsal.
Oh, that'll be nice.
Where is it?
Oh, you go down the road and you turn right at the big L. You can't miss the high school.
Now, on the stage, Kate sweeps aside a beaded curtain and strikes poses in a full skirt.
Love has its highs, love has its lows. Love has its highs and lows and ins and outs and ups and downs. Love's like a joyride on a merry-go-round.
Merry-go-round, merry-go-round. A plump woman joins her center stage.
Ups, downs, ins, outs, highs, lows. Any way the wind blows, any way
they
the wind
dance.
Blows. Goes love, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, but if it's hot or cold, you learn to burn and then you freeze. Love's like a circus, and you're on a trapeze.
On a trapeze, on a trapeze, on a trapeze.
Ups, downs, ins, outs, highs, lows, any way the wind blows, any way the wind blows. Goes love. Goes low.
Now the two women prance around a table of men. One by one, the men stand and follow them across the stage. Larry enters the auditorium.
Love's like a circus, and you're on a trapeze.
The men dance in a synchronized line behind Kate.
Ups, downs, ins, outs, highs, lows. Any way the wind blows, any way the wind blows. Goes low. Goes low. Goes low.
Larry smiles.
Continue. Drinks for everybody.
Yeah.
On Nerissa.
Oh, that's one.
Enjoy yourselves. Oh, Norman is a...
She looks around.
Norman? Dr. McQuarrie.
The minister sprints toward the stage.
Drummed out of the company.
Forgive me, Kate. My boy's confirmation class was packed with young devils today.
McQuarrie strides on stage wearing a legionnaire's cap.
Norman! Norman, is it really you?
Yes, Nerissa. It is I.
What are you doing here? This is such a surprise.
In the audience, Larry blinks thoughtfully.
Tell me that it is a happy surprise.
Oh, Norman. I have dreamed so many times of our meeting again. But not like this. Not in this evil place.
Larry watches intently.
I have found you.
No, Norman. I have changed.
Not to me.
Hands clasped to her chest, Kate stares distantly ahead.
Between the girl I was and the woman I am, stretched too many days, my dear. Too many nights.
Larry begins to mouth the words.
I care nothing for your yesterdays, so long as your tomorrows belong to me.
Stop that! What do you think you're doing?
Larry!
Well, it's just make-believe, Mr. McKay.
How dare you give them this play without asking my permission?
Your permission?
Well, we have Irving O'Reilly's permission.
Who's he? What's he got to do with my play?
Your play? Larry, you've never written a play.
Yes, I have, and this is it.
Here it is in black and white. Ghostly Music by Irving O'Reilly.
Can't you see this is a new title page just tacked on? Kate, the title of this play is So Passion Dies. I wrote it when I was in college, and I want to know how you got it.
I got it.
Her eyes grow wide.
You got it from Alfred North. A dirty double... He said he was going to pay me back, but to trick you into joining him.
You are mixing me up. How does our doing it pay you back if your name isn't even on it?
Isn't it possible he meant it as a nice surprise?
It is not possible, Dr. McQuarrie. This is a trap, and I don't intend to fall into it. I'm sorry, I cannot give you permission to do this play.
Oh, Mr. McQuarrie.
The performance is next Friday night. It's a benefit for a hospital.
And we're sold out. Oh, you're wrong about Mr. North. Why, he sold 78 tickets for us, and to important people, too. Actors, writers, directors, friends of yours, probably.
Uh-huh, there it is. Now do you get it? And do you think Alfred North's not going to tell these friends of mine whose play they're going to see?
If you'll forgive a colloquialism, so what? It's a very bad play, Dr. McQuarrie.
though maybe you haven't noticed.
Oh, I noticed. We all did. But fortunately, it was so bad, it was funny.
And Dr. Sprouck wrote us some lovely songs. And Dr. McQuarrie rewrote the play and turned it into a comedy.
That's funny already. Well, I'm pleased the two doctors are so talented. Now they can sit down and write you a new play, because you're not going to do this one.
Oh, Mr. McKay. Oh,
Larry strides away. Kate jumps down from the stage and races after him.
Please. I know how you feel. I'm as miserable as you are, believe me. But you can't just leave them like this. You don't know what it means to these people. They've worked their heads off. They've given of their time. They've neglected their businesses. It's terribly important to them. We can't do this to them, Larry.
What do you mean we can't? I can. I'm not going to look like an idiot just to prevent a lot of people I don't know or care about from a rather silly disappointment.
She gapes at him.
Larry, what's happened to you? Other people's feelings used to be important to you before you got so important. Well, let me tell you something. The bigger you're getting, the smaller you're getting.
It's hardly the time or the place for a critical analysis of my character. If you want to talk about it...
It won't take long. It's not much of a character.
Oh?
You're getting to be a mean man, Larry. Almost as mean as your reviews. Well, I think Alfred was right. It might do you some good if people did laugh at you.
They're not going to have the chance. It's still my play. I haven't given you permission to do it.
And you have every right to take it back. Well, you go ahead. But if you do, I'll never forgive you.
If you cared anything about me, you couldn't say that.
I care a great deal about you. And I do say it.
Larry studies her face. He drops his gaze.
I wouldn't dream of coming between you and the hoot and holler players. Such as it is, the play is yours.
He hands her the script and walks away, blinking. She watches him go. Later, Kate eats dinner with Maggie and the boys.
I guess school says there's hugging and kissing in that show. Mom and the Minster. I don't think that's nice for a married lady.
Well, it's just for one performance, fellas. Oh, and how I wish it weren't tonight. What's that clock say, Mag? 6:15?
Yes, ma'am.
Better get going.
Oh, do you need any help?
No, I have everything at the auditorium. I'll come in before I leave.
Right. All right, now, fellas, clean up that stew, and there'll be chocolate cake for everyone.
Oh, boy. Hey, can Hobo have some?
No. He'll have to get worms.
He might like them.
Yeah.
In the hall. Wearing a pink dressing gown, Kate answers the front door. It's Alfred.
Hi, Katie.
She hugs him.
Well, he calls the boys every day and doesn't even ask for me. If he feels this way now, how will he feel when everyone's laughing at him? Come on.
She leads him into the study.
No one's going to laugh at him. He beat everyone to the punch, Kate.
He takes out a newspaper.
Reviewed the show himself, and he's come out smelling like a rose.
But we haven't even done it yet. He only saw 5 minutes of the rehearsal.
He says that's all he needed. But the Houghton players are charming. Particularly their leading lady.
I wish I were dead.
That they're wasting their time on a 20-year-old play written by a man with no talent for writing plays, namely himself.
Kate bows her head as Alfred reads.
It was rejected by every Broadway producer in terms so outraged that I determined never to write another one, thus saving myself years of futile effort and frustration. Here comes the cherry on the banana split. I have been under attack of late by my near and dear for what they consider my cruelty as a critic. But this glimpse of my past monstrosity has made me so grateful to those I once thought cruel that I shall go on yelling tripe whenever tripe is served. Well, we certainly taught him a lesson.
This whole nonsensical thing is costing me everything important in my life. Do you think he'll come to the performance?
Alfred holds up the paper.
Tonight, when the curtain rises on So Passion Dies, I shall be far, far away. And, dear reader, may I wish you the same good fortune.
Now, in his hotel room, Larry slumps in a chair. A waiter prepares his dinner cart.
What's the matter with everybody?
Something bugging you, Mr. McKay?
Gus, have you ever been in a situation where you're right and everybody else is wrong, but you just can't get them to see it?
Every day of my life. To my wife, my kids, the busboys, everybody. Better reach a steak before it cools off.
Gus hands Larry the tab.
You can get off a lonesome being right.
Larry glances up. He gives Gus the signed tab.
Thank you.
The waiter leaves, passing Joe the cab driver in the hallway outside. Joe enters.
Hello. I've been trying to locate you all day. Finally, I called the pet shop.
Joe! Why didn't you tell me it was you?
All right.
Come on in. Hey, I'm pleased to see you. Sit down.
Thanks.
Let me get you a drink.
No, I'm just going to stay a minute. I figured I owed you an apology.
What for?
Well, I've been thinking about you since the day you made fun of my play.
Yeah?
Then I read the column you wrote about your own play, and I saw I was wrong. You see, it's sort of hard for me giving up writing. Ever since I was a kid, the one thing
now,
I always wanted to do was...
You mean you stopped writing because of something I said?
Oh, sure. Sure, you see, where I was off was blaming you instead of blaming myself for not having talent. Actually, you were doing me a favor
Joe,
by now.
You're crazy. You do have talent.
Are you kidding? Remember me? I'm the genius who made Abraham sound like the guy ordering a pastrami sandwich.
Don't you understand? You didn't give me a chance to explain. You flew off the handle. Just sit right there. I want to talk to you.
He answers the door. It's Deborah. She wears a clingy dress under her fur.
I hate people who drop in without calling, don't you?
Larry looks awkwardly away.
Well, don't let me overexcite you.
Please come in.
I just came by to tell you your column was wonderful. Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry. Miss Deborah Vaughan, Joe Positano.
How do you do, Miss Vaughan?
Joe was a very talented writer till I convinced him he should stop writing.
Oh, he's kidding.
Joe smiles shyly.
Some column, wasn't it?
She casts a sideways glance at Larry.
I shall yell tripe whenever tripe is served. Wow. That's a declaration of war, chum. From now on, whenever you walk into a theater, they're going to shiver and shake.
I don't want anyone to shiver and shake. I love the theater.
This boy doesn't read his own reviews.
Joe hands her his drink.
Even I'll admit.
Thank you.
Since you turned mean, people started taking a more lively interest in you.
I've never turned mean. Nobody thinks I'm mean. Except my wife.
Well, she can't always be wrong.
I'll get it. Stay there.
I want to talk to both of you.
But I haven't had supper yet.
Eat mine.
Now, Grandma enters.
I guess you thought I was up in Hooton seeing the show. I told Kate she was wrong not to withdraw it. I washed my hands of wool, for heaven's sake, Joe.
Good evening, Mrs. Robinson.
Well, I haven't seen you
Mrs. Robinson, Miss Deborah Vaughan. Miss Susie is my mother-in-law.
They shake hands.
How do you do?
I didn't get here first. Joe did.
As long as you don't leave last. Larry, I have something to tell you. Would you excuse us, please?
Grandma leads Larry into the bathroom. Once inside, she flips down the toilet lid and takes a seat.
Come on, sit down. Kate just called me. That's why I came over. She was blubbering.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, she was.
Oh, poor baby. I must call.
No, no. That's exactly what you mustn't do. Larry, don't go near that girl until she calls you and apologizes.
But I don't want her to be unhappy. I love her.
Oh, loving her is one thing. Letting her think she's intelligent is another. And look where it's got you. Into a house you don't want and a lot of ridiculous interference in your career. Well, she's good and scared now. And that's the way you keep her, right under your thumb.
Do you think I ought to make her say, Hi, Larry, first thing every morning?
Wouldn't do a bit of harm. You've turned into a strong man in the past few months. Don't stop. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of me, too.
He stands.
It's just wonderful to have everybody scared of me. One clever word for me and a new writing talent gives up. If I really play my cards right, they may not even bother to open plays anymore. That's how scary I am. And to make my own wife crawl, that would be the final triumph. It's intoxicating, all this power.
Oh, darling, you're exaggerating because you're upset.
Slowly, Larry turns.
I should be.
He lunges for the door.
If it's a play you've got, I'm looking for one.
Oh, I got one, but it's lousy.
I may like it. I have terrible taste.
Larry strides out into the hallway, his suit jacket over one arm. He reaches the elevators and presses the down button. The doors open, and he nearly collides with Kate. Together, they step back inside.
We're going up, sir.
In the crowded car, Larry pulls on his navy jacket.
I was just coming home.
Oh, Larry. you.
The elevator stops on another floor, and people file out.
Is it my fault? Everything.
Now, don't you say that. It was not. And anyway, now it doesn't...
matter?
She nods.
Let it out. Down, please.
Larry and Kate stay where they are as more people crowd in.
How was the play?
They liked it. Honey, we'll sell the house.
No, I love it. I love the house.
Kate smiles.
Darling, I'll be so different.
No!
People turn and stare.
I beg your pardon.
He pulls Kate into his arms and kisses her. Later, at the house, Gabriel peeks out of an upstairs window. He sees his parents strolling below, arm in arm. He signals behind him. David and George hoist little Adam onto the windowsill and hand him a bloated paper bag. He drops it. The older boys duck down out of sight. Adam smiles brightly, swinging his legs. Fade to black. A title, The End, made by U-Turp Incorporated, released by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.